All right, this is Forrest Elise interviewing Laura L. Haas for the Creative Push Project on August 16th at 12:45. Okay, so we'll go ahead and get started. So maybe take us back to as far back as the conception, if you can, you know, and
okay.
If there is anything memorable, you know, if it was a planned birth or whatnot, you know, as far back as you can, I guess, maybe
okay.
Details as you can.
Well, I wouldn't say he was planned. I wouldn't say he was a complete accident either. It was sort of like that weird in between where we knew that we were being irresponsible, but we didn't really care. So it wasn't any huge surprise when I ended up pregnant. And I had symptoms almost immediately, like after conceiving, which sounds crazy, but I didn't realize it at first, but I just started, like, I was peeing a lot, and I was craving just, like, meat, like, for a week straight. I just craved, like, protein and chicken and burgers and meat, and I think another week went by, and I was in the mall with my husband, and I was trying on clothes, and all of a sudden, like, my nipples started burning. And I was like, David, what's going on? My nipples are burning. This is so weird. And combined with everything else, I was like, could I be pregnant? That's so weird. And he said, yeah, they do look really, like, irritated. And I was like, okay, well, we'll see how the next few days go or whatever. And being a midwifery student, I knew that, you know, from the date of conception, you know, you have to wait between 11 and 13 days before you get a positive pregnancy test. And so I was looking at all my, like, anatomy diagrams on the wall, and had, like, a diagram of, like, you know, a fertilized, like, fertilization, and then how it, like, morphs and, you know, eventually implants into the uterine wall. And I was looking at that, and I was like, that might be going on right now. So I think it was a few days before my missed period that I finally took a pregnancy test. And by took a pregnancy test, I mean I took like 10. And I was really frustrated because I was looking at them and they were all negative. And I was like, this can't be. I swear I'm pregnant. And so I was just like throwing them away. And I took like a clear blue one later on during the day. And I saw a line and I was like, holy shit. I'm pregnant. And I went back and I looked at those other pregnancy tests that day, and they were all positive. There were really faint positives, but I just hadn't waited long enough for it to show up, or it was so early that it was really, really faint. So I Facebooked a picture of one of them to my friend, and she said, yeah, you're pregnant. And I was like, oh my gosh. And the first person I texted was my sister, and she remembers it to this day. And she got a text message, and I said, dude, I'm pregnant. So that was the story of his conception. And so my husband, he found out, obviously, and he brought flowers. And he said, this is for the bun in the oven. And that was, you know, around 4 weeks, when I was 4 weeks pregnant. And then when I was 6 weeks pregnant, that's sort of when, like, HCG starts peaking and, you know, things start getting really crazy. So I started experiencing perinatal depression right when I started experiencing morning sickness. I didn't really throw up a lot or anything, but I was just, like, constantly nauseous, all-day sickness. And I was constantly depressed, which was awful. And I'd experienced depression before when I initially moved to Maine, but this was like a different kind of depression. It was like I was very agitated and just very irritable, and I didn't want to be touched, and just very, like, you know, flat sometimes. And so I was happy that I was pregnant, but I was also just not not able to be fully present in the experience when it was really early on. So right around when I was 12 or 13 weeks, I waited. And in my mind, I suffered those six or seven weeks to get on antidepressants. I wanted to wait for his heart to develop. And so right at that mark, when I knew things were okay, I was like, okay, I just need to take this medication. And so I started taking Zoloft. And it helped a little bit, but I was still just really, like withdrawn pretty much my entire pregnancy. I didn't really want anybody to like touch my belly or, touch me in general. But I was still, I loved, even, before he was born, I loved him and he was wanted, and I was really happy being pregnant. Just not the experience of being pregnant, if that makes sense.
Did that impact your marriage?
Oh, yeah. It was really, really hard for David. He's very sensitive. And so he tried really hard to, work on things with me and, help me or cook things or whatever he could do to lend his support. But I didn't want that, I guess. So it created a lot of tension. He went to bed upset a lot of nights, and I went to bed just feeling flat and irritated. So it was definitely rough. We weren't married at the time. We didn't get married until, let's see, I found out I was pregnant on June 14th. And we didn't get married until August 7th. So there was some time in between there where we were trying to figure out if we were even going to stay together or what we were going to do. And in my mind, I was just like, I'm pregnant. I'm alone. I'm in Maine. I don't know what to do about my relationship. What's going to happen? And I just wasn't really in a very good place to make decisions. But we got married anyway, on August 7th, when I still fit into my wedding dress, because I had bought a dress, and I was, must have been like 16 weeks, right around there. And so I had started to gain a little bit of weight, but I still fit into it. And so I put on my wedding dress and did my hair, and we went down to City Hall and got married.
Did either, both of you, think of the depression which was impacting the marriage as a temporary state? Like, did you know at the time, this is because of my pregnancy and it'll go away once I have this baby?
I don't think we knew for sure. I think we hadn't been together very long before I got pregnant. We had sort of a whirlwind courtship, and I think the depression and the pregnancy and like the real life hitting us sort of brought my feelings up that maybe this person wasn't the right person for me, and it was going to end eventually. And I think he thought that too, but we wanted to give it a fair shot, so we weren't sure. I think that's really common with depression too, that you don't really trust your experience sometimes because you don't know what's real. You don't know what you don't see things as they are. Sometimes you see things through the lens of your depression or your anxiety or whatever illness you're going through. So we didn't know if it was going to lift when Ramsey was born, and if it did lift, were we still going to be together? So it was a really rough time with the depression and not even knowing if we were going to stay together or anything like that. But we tried. And, he did the best he could through the pregnancy. And you know, when I had moments of, you know, clarity, or I wasn't feeling too irritable that day, you know, we had some good days.
How was the physical experience of pregnancy for you?
I kind of hated it. I was nauseous up until maybe 18 weeks. So I was just nauseous all the time. I did throw up a few times. I would brush my teeth and I would just come out and I'd be like, I have to throw up. So the physical experience was difficult for me. The nausea, I had migraines throughout my pregnancy too. They started right around 14 weeks and disappeared maybe around 30 weeks. And I'm prone to migraines anyway, but in the pregnancy, they were just, like, debilitating to the point where I would feel it and I would have to go lay down in the dark and put an ice pack on my head and not talk and just pass out. I couldn't take my migraine medication in pregnancy. I couldn't take the Imitrex. They said it wasn't safe. But apparently Vicodin is safe. So they gave me Vicodin. And when when I have a migraine, I'm desperate. I'll take anything. So I took the Vicodin. And I ended up in urgent care one time for the migraine because I was so dehydrated and exhausted. And I'd been in pain for 2 days. And so they brought me into urgent care and gave me fluids and gave me morphine. And it didn't really help with the pain. It just made me not care. So I came home, and the minute I came home and I was walking, I was like, I gotta throw up because of the narcotics. So I threw up again, and I took Tylenol, I think, and I went to sleep. And so it was a rough pregnancy. I didn't like the experience of being pregnant other than feeling him move, which was amazing because I loved him and I felt like I knew him and I felt like I knew his personality. And so that was the one thing that I remember really enjoying was the belly pictures. I enjoyed taking belly pictures and feeling him move and kick, and I would, you know, poke him or something like that, and he would poke back. And there was this one pair of pants. They were just like regular maternity pants, and they weren't particularly tight or uncomfortable for me in any way, but for whatever reason, the way they sat on my belly, he did not like them. He didn't like it. And every time I wore those pants, without fail, he would like push his head against the waistband and just keep doing it as if he was saying, "Excuse me, I don't like these." And so I would change my pants and he would stop. It was the weirdest thing. So I just stopped wearing those pants in my pregnancy. Unless I was worried about him or something, so I put those pants on and then he would like push his head and I'd be like, okay, he's okay. I was very anxiety ridden in my pregnancy too. I was a very nervous first time pregnant lady. And I think part of it is because I knew everything that could happen and could go on, and I knew I had a 30% chance of miscarriage. And early on, when I was taking all those pregnancy tests, I was working in one of my clinical rotations for midwifery school for a midwifery practice, and I asked one of the midwives to take my blood and do like a serum HCG, and she did it, and I left for Colorado before the results came back, and they called me while I was in Colorado, and they said, well, your HCG isn't as high as we would like. And, you know, we want to see it, you know, doubling or tripling, whatever, rising. And I was really scared. And so I called my actual midwife. And she said, well, you know, it could mean that, you know, it's just really early or that the pregnancy isn't viable. And that was just like, oh, my gosh. Like, I was so scared to, you know, lose the pregnancy. And so I had labs done at the hospital in Colorado to make sure that everything had been doubling. Of course, we got the results and everything was fine and everything was doubling and he was going to be okay.
Can you explain what an HCG is?
Yeah.
In
layman's terms. It's the hormone that... So when an egg is fertilized and multiplies and everything and attaches to the uterine wall, when it attaches to the uterine wall, it starts secreting that hormone into the... And it goes into the mother's bloodstream. And that's what, like, a home pregnancy test will pick up on. It's the HCG. So that's why you can be pregnant, but if it hasn't implanted into the uterine wall yet, you won't get a positive pregnancy test because that hormone isn't being secreted into the mother's bloodstream.
Which is why you have to wait.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you have to wait, I think, 11 to 13 days after conception. That's how long it takes for it to travel down and implant and do all that. Hope I remembered all that correctly. I've been out of midwifery school a while. So yeah, it was a tough pregnancy.
So were you on your feet a lot? Were you working the whole time?
No, I was in midwifery school for part of the time. So I went to school 3 days a week and, you know, just studied, kept on going, which was also difficult in some ways. We had some we were doing our complications classes that year, so we had like prenatal complications. So everything about like miscarriage and, you know, everything that can go wrong and things like that. I think we had that class while I was early pregnant or just before I had gotten pregnant. And then we had newborn complications, which was, I was completely checked out of. I think I got a C in that class or something. I just did not want to see all those babies with all those problems and with diseases and, you know, horrible pictures. And coupled with my depression already and my anxiety about, you know, is he okay? Was he going to be okay? I couldn't deal with that, so I checked out, and my teacher in that class was really, I think she was upset with me about that, but what could I do? I didn't want to deal with it, so yeah, I was still going to school, and our school year ended in December, and so we decided, my teachers and I decided, if he was going to be born in the end of February, his due date was February 23rd, that I shouldn't start the last semester because, you know, I would have a baby in the middle of it and it would be really hard to, you know, finish everything and deal with that pressure. That was our last academic semester before we went to our preceptorships, which is the year to year and a half long training where we get the bulk of our birth experience. So we had a research class and some other classes to finish up, and they said, no, you should probably go on leave of absence now and don't start it because you're going to have a baby in the middle of it. So I stopped going in January, which was also hard for me because, I mean, I was kind of isolated in Maine and I only had my husband who... We did not have a smooth marriage at all for the time that we were married. And my classmates in midwifery school were like my tribe. They were my girls. And so when I didn't have them, that was difficult for me too. But they visited when they were free, and they all came after he was born, and several of them were there for the birth. And I think it was in January, December or January, that a former client of my midwife, so I had my midwife, who she was also my preceptor for my clinical rotation, and I had worked with her and I had seen her in action, and I knew, well, if I ever have a baby, I want Susie to be my midwife. And while I was working with Susie, we attended a birth of one of her clients, and I was the student for that birth. And me and the client developed, you know, a bond, and it was her first baby, and you know, she was really interested in, you know, me being a student and everything. And I think in December or January, she contacted me and said, "Oh, I hear you're having a baby. That's so exciting. And, you know, do you want to get together?" And so we started hanging out. And she would take me on walks around the mall. And this was in the middle of winter in January, so we didn't really have anywhere else to go. So we'd go to the mall and just walk around and talk and, you know, complain about our husbands or talk about the pregnancy. And she would bring her baby and everything. And so we would do that in the winter, which was nice. And in February, or end of January, beginning of February, my mom was planning on coming out for the birth, and my sister was as well, and they were trying to sort of scatter their visits. And she said, "Oh, I'll come out, you know, on the 15th or the 19th or something, you know, closer to your due date." And I said, "I don't know if you should do that." She's like, "What do you mean?" I'm like, "Well, I think he might come earlier than that." She said, are you sure? Like, it's your first pregnancy. Are you having any signs?" And I said, "No, that's just my feeling. Like, he feels like he's just one of those babies who wants to get the job done. Like, I'm just telling you that." And she said, "Okay, well, I'll just keep it for the 15th or whatever." And so I have this thing with the number 7. I just really love the number 7. So we got married on August 7th, and that was intentional. And I thought, I would really love for him to be born on the 7th. So I circled the 7th on the calendar. And I think the 7th was a Thursday. It might have been a Thursday. Thursday or Friday. And I thought, oh, it would be perfect if he was born on that Saturday, which I think happened to be the 9th. The 8th or the 9th. And so I went along just the rest of the pregnancy. I was tired of being pregnant. I just didn't have a good experience the whole pregnancy with everything going on.
Were you big at this point? I mean, did you put on a lot of weight or no?
I gained like 30 pounds, so I gained about the average amount of weight. I didn't feel super big or anything. I felt sore, and I felt kind of like fatigued and tired, but I didn't feel, you know, I wasn't walking around like, "Oh God, I feel huge," or anything like that. One time I came out of the bathroom and my husband was laying on the couch, and he's not a particularly eloquent person, and so he looks at me and he goes, "You're like a whale." And I was like, "Excuse me?" Realize that I'm like 37 weeks pregnant, right? He was like, "I mean, you're like a whale, and you're really majestic and beautiful." I was like, "Okay, this is a good save. But I didn't feel like super huge or anything. I just felt sore and irritated, and like I just wanted it to be done with. So I didn't have too many, you know, like Braxton Hicks or anything like that. I mean, I would have them occasionally, but I knew they weren't labor. So I didn't really have any like pre-labor or anything like that. My midwife checked me. I think this was probably maybe a week before he was born, something like that. And she checked me, and I wasn't effaced at all. I wasn't really dilated. My cervix was high. It might have been, you know, softer, but there weren't really any indications that I was going to go into labor anytime soon. And so it was, let's see, I went to bed the night of the 7th. And I woke up at 2:30 in the morning, so technically the 8th, and I felt like period-type cramps, and I was really uncomfortable. And so I tried using the heating pad, see if they would go away or anything like that. And I couldn't sleep, and they weren't going away. So I thought, okay, I'll get up. And midwives, one thing that they tell you is, if you're getting contractions and you're not sure if you're really in labor, take a shower, take a warm shower, relax, have some tea. And if they slow down, you know, it might not be time yet. If they stay the same or if they increase in intensity, you might be in labor. So that's what I did. I got up and I took a shower, took a long hot shower. And they started increasing in intensity in the shower. I was like, okay, I guess I might be in labor. So I got out and I let David know, I think I might be in labor. And I put on Harry Potter because I had this crazy idea that I was going to get through all seven or eight of the Harry Potter movies during my labor. And so I put on the first one, and I just bounced on the ball, you know, the birth ball. And at that point, I was just, you know, breathing through them or whatever. They weren't super intense, but I let my midwife know, and I let her student know. And her student was coincidentally my old roommate. And I let my one classmate know, who she was operating as my doula. And I let the other classmate know, and she was going to be taking pictures of the birth. So there's a lot of people. So I hung out on the ball and I just had some yogurt or something. And so around, I think probably it was 5 or 6 in the morning, they started getting a little more intense, and I felt it all in my back. Like I felt a tightening, but nothing really in the front. And my doula said, "Oh, well, just let me know whenever you need me, and I'll come." And so I think I messaged her around 8, and I said, "Oh, I need you now." So she came, and then later on, I think maybe not too long after that, maybe 2 hours later, the student midwife came. And then the main midwife came. And David started blowing up the birth tub in the middle of the room. And they were making sure that the Harry Potter movies were still on. But at that point, I just, like, was completely checked out. I had no idea which one we were on or what was even going on. And so much for that idea. So they were filling up the birth tub, and I was surprised at how intense they were for me, thinking so, you know, so early on. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to have this baby soon, because these were getting really intense. And, you know, I was talking to my midwife about it, and we made an agreement that she wouldn't tell me about the dilation, and she wouldn't check unless she had good reason to. And we agreed that the only thing she would tell me was if I was less than 5 or more than 5. And so I don't think she checked for a while. And I tried, eventually when the birth tub was set up, getting into the birth tub. And that was nice, but I had really, really horrible back labor. And I knew it. In my head, I was like, oh shit, I have back labor, this is going to be bad. Because my mom, she's had 3 babies, and she had told me previously that she had had back labor with 2 of her kids. And I said, oh gosh, what did it feel like? I knew I had studied it, and so people had described it as like a knife in their sacrum, and just really, really painful stuff. And my mom had described it as a gremlin coming out of her butt. She was like, it feels like a gremlin's trying to come out of your butt. I was like, okay. And so this must have been, I mean, I have some good memory of the birth, but a lot of it is blurry too, just because I was in a lot of pain. So this must have been into the evening of the 8th. So this was probably 5, 6 p.m., somewhere around there. I had been in and out of the birth tub. I liked the birth tub, but I felt like I had to move, and I felt really claustrophobic, and I felt like I couldn't move my body the way I wanted to in the tub. So I got out of the tub. And the one relief was a really, really hot shower. Really, really scorching hot shower on my back. And even then it was horrendous, but that was the only thing that really seemed to provide any sort of relief. And a few times, it was like a 2-hour period where I was just wanted to be done. And I would just like look at my midwife and I was just like, I want to be done. I want to be done. She's like, you'll be done eventually. And we were in the shower. David was in the shower with me, and I kind of cornered him, and I was like, I'm serious. I want to be done. Take me to the hospital. Take me. I want an epidural. And he was like, well, why don't we wait? Let's wait a little longer. And so that went on for probably 2 hours of me saying, I want to be done. I want to be done. And this was during the blizzard Nemo, too, in 2013, so it was a blizzard outside. And I knew I didn't really want to go to the hospital, but I was in so much pain that, I mean, at that point, you'll do anything. And my midwife said, you know, we can transfer to the hospital if you want, but you're going to be waiting a really long time because you're not emergent. It's a snowstorm. It's a blizzard. They're not going to get here in 5 minutes. You know, it's going to be a while. So, you know, we know that you want to be home. So let's try to be home. And so after our talk, I was like, okay, I'm just going to do it. I'm going to have this baby and I'm not going to complain about it anymore. So I think it was around, it must have been around maybe 8 or 9 at night. It was somewhere around there. And I was on the bed. I was laboring on the bed. And my midwife had checked me earlier, and she said, you're less than 5. And I was like, oh, fuck, you gotta be kidding me. And they said, we think that maybe the baby isn't in an optimal position. You know, we can't feel his head very well, you know. It could be that he's turned in a weird way. You know, you're having a lot of back labor. And I said, okay. So they decided that we were just going to do a lot of position changes. And so I would do pancake flips on the bed, which is basically laying on my left side for a contraction, then laying on my right side, then maybe standing up, hands and knees. I took stairs. A lot of stairs. At some point I was on the bed and I said, somebody call Amelia. Somebody get her down here. And Amelia was the former client who had been taking walks with me in the mall. And so we called her, the midwife called her and said, Lara's asking for you. Can you come down and be with her? And she said, oh yeah, of course. So she had her dad drive her down in the middle of a blizzard. And she lived up north, so she lived probably 30, 35 minutes up north. So she had her dad drive her down in the middle of a blizzard to be with me. And when she got there, that was a relief. I felt like she, you know, she and I had been, you know, walking a lot together and talking, and I had shared her birth with her, so I felt like kind of a special kinship with her. And so she helped me through it too, along with everybody else. It was good that I had a lot of people there because it was a really long labor and a really exhausting one for the midwives, of course for me too. And David, I don't think slept at all. I think in 25 hours he didn't sleep. He was awake the entire time. So I did a lot of those position changes for a really long time. And I had a bulging bag of water, so my bag of waters was just kind of like hanging out there. And my midwife didn't want to rupture them because if she ruptured them, he wouldn't have as much cushion to turn and he might have stayed malpositioned. He might have been, you know, might have stayed stuck. We don't know. So she just kept it intact. And I remember I had a lot of like bloody show, like during labor. It didn't appear before labor, like some women describe bloody show before they go into labor. I just had it through my labor. And my midwife would always say, "Oh, that's great bloody show, Laura. That's great. That means you're progressing." And I was just like, "Uh-huh. Yeah, it's really great. Yay." You know, I was very irritated about the whole thing. And so it must have been around probably 11 p.m. midnight. Things started finally picking up. And I forgot to mention this before, but in retrospect, I had a premature urge to push from about 5 centimeters on because of the way his head was positioned. And so I wasn't anywhere near ready to push, but I had this urge. And I knew that I had to blow through it and I couldn't push. And I knew at that point that he wasn't positioned quite right, you know. And so I would just, like, I did that so much. I didn't really scream. I didn't yell or anything. I didn't cry. I mean, maybe in my head I felt louder, but everyone around me said that I was pretty quiet. I was very internal, but I would do that to sort of cope with having this, like, intense urge to push. And they describe in a lot of books how the urge to push is like throwing up in reverse. Like your body just like, you feel your body having to do it and you have no other choice but to comply. Like you have to. And that's exactly how pushing feels. Like needing to push. That's how it feels to me. Like you get this feeling in your body and you just like, you have to go with it. And not going with it felt really wrong. But I had to just blow through it. And then, you know, finally around 11 or 12, I said, "Susie, I feel like I really need to push." And she said, "Okay, well, let's labor a little longer. Blow through it a little longer. And then in a little bit, I'll check you. I'll see what's going on. And I'll feel what's happening, you know, inside your body when you're pushing. Because I don't want you to tear your cervix. I don't want you to push if it's ineffective. So let's wait a little bit." And so that was the most frustrating part, was having to push so badly and not being able to. So I was laboring on the toilet and I was having a contraction, and then all of a sudden I felt something and I said, oh God, because for some reason I thought,
where were we?
Oh, I was on the toilet.
Yes.
And I said, oh God, because I thought, oh God, the baby's coming out really fast. I'm going to have the baby on the toilet. But it was my waters. So they finally, they like bulged out and they just like broke while I was laboring on the toilet. And David was right there and he was like, oh wow. And so after that, things picked up again. And this was, I don't know, I'm guesstimating because I honestly don't remember. I remember looking at, he was born in the bedroom. And so I remember being in the bedroom looking at David's clock. And it had those big red numbers on it. And I remember looking at that clock. And so this must have been 1 a.m., 2 a.m., something like that. And so she checked me. And she said, you're around 8, 9. You've got a little bit left. So if you feel like pushing, go ahead and push and I'll feel what's going on. And so I pushed. I was like, oh, it feels so great. And she said, okay, I think, you know, I don't think it's hurting anything. I think it's okay for you to push a little bit and, you know, see what happens. I think it might be effective. And so after that point, I would just, if I felt the need to sort of bear down or push, I would push, which was a great relief. And that was the best feeling. Like, my labor was absolutely horrible. Like, it was the worst. But I loved pushing. Pushing was, like, the greatest relief to me, and it felt really good. So I was glad that I was allowed to push at that point. I still had really bad back labor, but the fact that I could push through it was better. And so I was on the bed. I was leaning up against the bed. And everyone was sort of around me, so I was up against the bed, and I had all these women around me. And then I had David behind me over here. And I remember feeling like I had felt him drop. And so I squatted down on the side of the bed, and as I was pushing, I reached my hand in, and I felt his head move down. And I thought, holy shit. I thought, that's my baby's head. And so I told everybody, I feel his head, I feel his head. And at that point, I remember I started talking to him. And I said, okay, come on, we can do this. Let's do this, we're almost done. And so I kept feeling as I was pushing, because that was like my motivation, like I could feel his head coming down. And I turned around once I knew that, you know, he was getting to the point where he was going to be crowning. And Amelia, my friend who had driven up to be with me, she was behind me, and David was next to me, and the midwife was in front. And so, yeah, he started crowning, and she had a mirror, so I could see in the mirror. And I was really quiet, with the exception of one time when I was pushing, I said, slow and steady wins the race. Just to, you know, I wanted to push probably a lot faster than I did, but I knew that I should, you know, take things slowly. So I felt the ring of fire that everybody talks about. And it was pretty intense. It was a lot of stinging and stretching. And my midwife said later that she was really impressed that I hadn't complained about it. I hadn't screamed about it. I didn't say anything. I just sort of pushed right on through it. And I did. I mean, I felt it, and I was like, oh, shit, that's really intense. That stings. But I just pushed and pushed, and I pushed only for maybe 45 minutes. And soon his head was out. And she said, okay, well, whenever you're ready, you know, take your time. And I thought, I just want to be done. I just want to push this kid out. So I just barreled him out. I pushed him out. And David caught him. And I remember David being nervous because he was, you know, holding his head, supporting his head. And he was worried that his fingers were in the baby's eyes. He's like, I don't want to poke him in the eye. So he came out fast, and they put him on me, and he started screaming right away. And I was crying, and I looked at my friend who was the student midwife. She had helped, you know, catch him with David, and I said, I just had a baby. She said, that's right. You did it. And I was just so overwhelmed that I looked at her and I was like, oh, I just had a baby. And he had really dark hair. And he had definitely been turned. He was ended up being OP, so sunny side up, essentially. And possibly some other complications with him being sort of stuck in there for a while. And so the entire right side of his face was really bruised and swollen. You could tell he'd been through a lot trying to come out. And so he was crying a lot, and he had a bit of a shorter cord. Not anything to be concerned about, but where I couldn't hold him up as high as I wanted to, so I was holding him lower, and I kept pressuring my midwife to cut the cord too early. And I knew I didn't want to cut the cord, but I wanted my baby. She was like, well, we have to wait for the cord to stop. I was like, okay, fine. And so we waited for the cord to stop, and they cut it, and they, you know, gave him to me. And after a baby's born in a home birth, they have blankets on the warmer, so they immediately put a blanket on him and put a hat on so he doesn't lose heat. And so they did that. And I was holding him, and I was still squatting by the bed, and I had a small hemorrhage. Not like anything super concerning that I would go to the hospital for or that would make me super lightheaded or anything, but more than average. And so they gave me a shot of Pitocin in my leg and did some massage just to try to get me to stop bleeding. And so I, the bleeding slowed down, and then I delivered the placenta, and that was fine. And everything gets a little bit blurry after that, because after that point, you're, like, so exhausted. And you're just like, oh my god, I just had a baby. It's over. It's done. So he was born at 3:25 a.m. on February 9th. Several weeks before his due date. At 38 weeks exactly. He was born at 38 weeks exactly. And he pinked up right away. And he didn't cry too much after the birth. He quieted down after that. And in a home birth, after the birth and everything, the midwives just sort of get everything cleaned up. They get mom cleaned up, so they got me cleaned up. The midwife took a look at, you know, if I had had any tearing or anything like that. And I think I had a minor tear. I had like a first degree tear, which is nothing much, it's just the skin. And then I had a really small area where it went to second degree, which is a little bit into the muscle. And she said, it's not too bad. She said, I can give you some stitches, but you know that, you know, it's not really gonna do any good. It just, if you're gonna be up and moving around a lot, I'd rather give you stitches. But if you can stay in bed with your legs closed and not take the stairs for 1 to 2 weeks, then I won't stitch you up. And I said, yeah, I'll just lay in bed. I'll do that. You know, it's still called lying in or whatever. So I did the lying in. I didn't have stitches. Mostly because it really hurt. Like, it stung after you just had a baby and everything's swollen and everything's sensitive. And, you know, they have to examine everything. And that was the one time that I just started yelling out, you know, expletives and F this and F that and shit. And like, I hadn't uttered a single cuss word the entire labor, the entire birth. And then afterward, I was just like, last thing I want is you to try to stick something sharp there. So let's just not do that. So yeah, I said, I'll do the lying in. And so they got me situated, and they weighed him, and he was 7 pounds, 2 ounces, 18 inches long, and I don't remember his head circumference, but his APGAR scores were fine, I think, 8, 9, 10, I don't remember those very well. And they got me a sandwich to eat. They got me food, water. Made sure the bleeding was under control. And David was just over on the bed already snoring. He was just like so exhausted. He was like, okay, the baby's here. I can be done. And so I'm holding the baby and I'm really excited. I'm like, hey, David, do you want to name him? You know, you want to talk about names? And he was like, no. And so he just turned over again and fell asleep. And the last thing I remember from that period is the midwives above me, as I was laying down with the baby, talking to me about instructions. You know, if you feel this, if you see this, if the baby does this, this is normal, this isn't, give us a call, we'll be back in the morning, that kind of thing. And I remember my eyes were just like I was falling asleep, and they were like, okay, we're gonna go. And so they set down the instructions and everything, and everybody left. I don't remember if my doula stayed or if she went home. I think she might have stayed. I don't remember. But yeah, eventually I fell asleep, and so we all slept. And
did you put him to your breast right away? Did he nurse or?
When he was born, they tried to get him to nurse, but it wasn't really happening. And they tried to get him to nurse again before they left. And he did a little bit, but not very much. He just sort of slept. And I didn't think too much of it at the time. So yeah, we slept all through the night, and I kept him, you know, on my chest with me. And in the morning, the midwives came back, took a look at us. I remember David was in the room, and I said, okay, so do you wanna talk about names now? Because I've always been really into baby names. And so we had this long list of names. And I had gone through a few names during the pregnancy that I was attached to. I think for a while I was really attached to Henry. And we talked about Alexander. And Isaac was one of our big ones. And that day after his birth, it was between Isaac and Ramsey. And he said, okay, well, what about Isaac? And I looked at him and I said, I don't know if he's really an Isaac. And he said, Ramsey? And I looked at him and I thought, yeah, okay. And I said, Ramsey David, you know, for the middle name. And he said, yeah, sure. I said, okay, we got a baby name. So after we named him, I took a picture. And I remember he was wearing like a lime green baby hat. He was sleeping and his hair was really dark. He looked very Middle Eastern. And Ramsey is my father's name, and my father's from Lebanon. And I thought, oh yeah, that fits perfectly. And so I sent the picture to everybody, and I said, Ramsey David Bell. And I remember my dad was... He wasn't like super excited, but he was like, oh, you named him Ramsey, you know. It kind of took my dad a while to get used to the idea that there was a baby named after him. And my dad, he didn't like the name Isaac, because he said, oh, well, that's a Hebrew name. Remember, you're Lebanese. And I was like, well, David's a Hebrew name too. It's not a big deal. But I remember that. I remember thinking, oh gosh, if we had named him Isaac, my dad would have been mad. I'm sure he would have gotten over it. But, yeah, so we named him Ramsey. And my mom switched her flight. I think it was David or someone else that had let her know that I was in labor, you know, way before anybody had anticipated. And so she switched her flight and she came in, I think she came in on the 12th. So pretty soon afterward, she was able to change her flight and come in and be with us. And that was when things started getting more difficult, because he wasn't nursing very well, and it really, really hurt when he nursed. It was really, really painful, and it felt like he was just like chomping on my nipple, and it wasn't working. And so every time I would latch him on, I would like wince in anticipation of this horrible pain. And so our newborn phase was really fraught with confusion and difficulty. And I think 3 days after he was born, the midwives, they come one day after birth, 3 days a week, and I think 4 weeks. So they come multiple times, and they came 3 days after he was born, and he was down to 6 pounds 4 ounces. So he had lost nearly a pound, and that's, you know, it's normal for newborns to lose weight, but he had lost way too much weight. And so I was really, really upset and really anxious, and I didn't know what was going on. I didn't know what was wrong. And I remembered sitting and having a conversation with my friend who had been at the birth, one of my classmates, and saying, "Do you think he has a tongue tie? Is that what's going on?" She says, "Well, I don't see anything, so I'm not sure. You know, I thought that initially, but I don't see anything." And after my mom had been there a while, she had nursed 3 babies, and she looked at him and she looked at me and she said, he's not nursing right. Something's wrong. And I remember feeling really alarmed, but I feel like the midwives, they didn't do anything wrong, but they were really relaxed about it, and they were maybe more relaxed than I would have liked. Definitely more than my mom would have liked, but she was, you know, she's a retired nurse and very, you know, wants to be very diligent about everything. So she was she wanted to be very on top of it, and I was just, I hadn't slept, and he cried all the time in the first week. They think also because he had a headache, probably from his face being smushed, and he was hungry, and he just cried and cried and cried. And I tried to nurse him, and he would still cry, and it would hurt, and he kept losing weight, and so it was really, really difficult. And so I started supplementing. I would pump and give him some, just in a syringe, and we also tried a little bit of formula just to get him fed. And so he developed like really bad jaundice, and it stuck around for a good length of time, maybe 3 weeks 4 weeks. And when he was 2 weeks old, I made an appointment with a lactation consultant. Someone had recommended her, and she came by and she watched him nurse, and she looked at his mouth and she said, he has a tongue tie. A tongue tie is when the skin on the underside of your tongue, the frenum or frenulum, is too tight or too restrictive, and babies need a lot of movement in their tongues to properly breastfeed. And he didn't have that movement. He wasn't able to really get the breast in his mouth like he needed to. And he also had an upper lip tie, which meant that he couldn't create a seal around the breast like he needed to breastfeed. And so he would constantly fall off. He would nurse for maybe a few minutes, and then he would fall asleep and fall off because he couldn't, he just couldn't keep the breast in his mouth. So we tried for a long time to get him to nurse, and I tried getting his tongue clipped at a doctor in town. I don't think he clipped it quite enough, though, and so we still had a lot of difficulty. And so we visited a doctor in Boston to try to get his tongue lasered. And so she lasered it and lasered the upper lip tie. And immediately afterward, it did feel better. Like, he nursed and I did feel a difference. But it didn't last very long. We still had a lot of difficulty nursing, so I just kept pumping and feeding him however I could feed him. And I was only sleeping 2 hours a night. I was pumping a lot. My husband was, I don't know, didn't really know how to deal with it, I guess. And he was working, and he said, well, you're going to Arizona to see your mom. Why don't you just go for a month? Why don't you go for a longer period of time? I can't support you, essentially, is what he said. He said, I can't help you. So,
did he mean emotionally?
Yeah, he meant that he couldn't do it emotionally, he couldn't do it physically. He wasn't coping very well with the lack of sleep, with worrying about everything. He made enough money that he could have taken off work, but he refused. He had promised me after the baby was born that he would take a week off work. And then 2 days later, he said, oh, can I take a client? And I think to this day that's something I still resent him for, is that I felt really abandoned and I felt really alone. And I was really mad about that he didn't follow through on his promise, that he started working way sooner. And he said later, oh, well, I thought it was okay because your mom was here, you know. But so I went to Arizona by myself with a 7-week-old who had just had tongue surgery, and on a drive back to Maine from Boston, you know, he wasn't able to nurse quite right yet, and I was pumping, and I had a manual pump, and my boobs were just, like, killing me, and I was driving, and I just started pumping while I was driving with a manual pump, which I don't recommend doing, because sometimes when you nurse or when you pump, you get that influx of hormones and it makes you really sleepy. And so I was pumping and I was already tired, and so I got that, I got the letdown and I got really sleepy. I was like, well, this is really dangerous. But I remember that vividly. That was right before I left for Arizona. And so I packed up, got on a plane. I had my pump, and I would pump when I could. And then I had a cooler or a lunchbox full of, like, formula and stuff like that, and bottles and everything. And I was a new mom, and he still wasn't nursing quite right, so it was just so difficult to travel. And I felt really self-conscious about pumping. And I thought, how the hell am I supposed to do this? I'm in an airplane. I have nowhere to put my newborn. And my boobs are going to explode. What am I doing? And luckily I sat next to this really nice man who to this day I remember him. And he said, if you need to pump, I'll hold the baby. If you need anything, let me know. And he was a really nice Mormon guy. And he said, oh yeah, I know. I have 3 or 4 kids. I know how it is. And so I took him up on that, and I said, would you mind holding him? He said, oh yeah, of course. So he held Ramsey while I pumped, And I just felt so, so grateful for him. And that was really nice. I wish I remembered his name. But, like, people, sometimes people surprise you, and traveling with a newborn, I remember, like, those little bits of kindness that people extend you. That was a glaring memory for me. So I got to Arizona, and he was seven or eight weeks at this point. And it was just still really hard. He started having a lot of reflux problems too. So he would just be eating, and then he would just like vomit everywhere, all over me, like soaking my pants. And he would vomit in his sleep, which was terrifying, which he still does that actually sometimes. So I'm a really light sleeper to this day. If he coughs or makes a noise or anything, I'm up and I have him up and I'm ready for like the vomit and like that emotional trigger of the baby letting out this high-pitched squeal and just vomiting everywhere. So it was difficult, and he still wasn't nursing quite right. He wasn't getting a lot. I would still nurse him because I wanted him to nurse. But with his reflux and everything, the breast milk made it worse because it was so thin, or for whatever reason, he just couldn't handle it. And so I had started slowly switching over to formula and just still pumping. And I was really feeling guilty about potentially stopping breastfeeding and everything. And eventually I talked to my mom about it, and she's like, I think you should have stopped a long time ago. It's just not healthy for you. You're not sleeping. You're worried. You're in pain. He's in pain. You know, do what you have to do. It's you're not a failure. It's okay. So I went through a lot of emotions with that, dealing with that. And before we had left for Arizona, I had wanted my doctor to prescribe me a domperidone. It's supposed to increase milk supply. With his tongue tie, he couldn't do that himself. And so I had been taking that. And so right when I had decided that I was going to stop, all of a sudden I had this like huge increase in my supply. And I was wearing like, you know, I come from a family of women who have big breasts. And so I'm normally like a D, and I was wearing like a G bra, and my boobs were huge and painful. And I was like, oh my gosh, this figures. Like, I'm pumping like probably 6-7 ounces out of each breast. And now I just decided to stop. This is going to be horrible. It was a horrible experience. So I had cold cabbage in my bra and breast pads, and I would pump just enough to like relieve the pressure. And it was just like I got those sharp pains, like from drying up or from the milk not being expressed. And I just remember feeling so gross. Like, I remember feeling like chubby, and like I smelled like sour milk. And then I had this kid who was just vomiting all over me, and it was just a mess. It was such a mess. And then I had to fly to California from Arizona for my dad's wedding and like be presentable. And I was happy to be there for my dad's wedding. I love my dad, and I have a really good relationship with my stepmom. And so I was really happy about the wedding, but I was so tired. I was running on 2 hours of sleep. I was, you know, at that point, everything had started to feel a little bit better in terms of me drying up, so that wasn't too much of an issue. But I had this newborn with reflux, and all my other family were from Canada. They were living in Canada. So I was the only one qualified to drive the rental car. I was like, you expect me to drive a fucking rental car around California with my baby screaming in the back seat? It was just like, it was so much to deal with. But somehow I managed to look presentable at my dad's wedding. And everybody loved Ramsey. He was 8 weeks by then, and the minute he could smile, that's all he did. He was one of those babies that people say, oh, he looks like he knows what's going on. You know, he was always looking around and engaging with people and smiling and laughing and charming the photographer at the wedding. And so he was a cute baby. But it was very difficult, and David didn't come with me. And my dad was really mad about that. And my dad said, no, he should have come to help you. It's not right that you're here by yourself. And I said, well, I can't. There's nothing I can do about it. And my dad was dropping me off at the airport to go back to Arizona. And I could tell, my dad's not a very, like, outwardly emotional guy, but I could tell he was very worried. And he said, okay, you got everything? And I said, I got everything. I'm okay, Dad. Okay, I'll be okay. And he looked at me and shook his head, and he said, you're a tough woman. And I said, thanks, Dad. And so I got back on the plane and went back to Arizona. And I feel like, I mean, like I mentioned before, I still have a little bit of a resentment towards my now ex-husband about, you know, essentially abandoning me during that time. But at the same time, it was like, it was this sort of whole experience that just completely shifted my world. And I hadn't, before that time, I had really struggled in, like, my personal relationships, romantic relationships, in life in general. And it was at that point that I reached a turning point and I realized that I would be able to get through anything in life. You know, if I can take care of this baby and myself alone with all of these things going on, and I'm okay, like, I'll be okay no matter what happens to me. And so even though I still sometimes carry that resentment, I feel like I built such a pillar of strength around that time too, that, you know, has carried me through a lot of other difficult times. So that was character building.
I was going to ask you what you think when you reflect back on that experience, but you pretty much summed it up right there, I would think, you know?
Yeah. I mean, I think, for me anyway, I mean, finding out I was pregnant and I was going to have a baby did change me a little bit, but it wasn't until he was born, that baby is born, and I, like, it changes you. It changed me. Just everything, the world just, like, shifted. And I had realized, like, all these mistakes that I had made in my life, or all these horrible decisions that I had made, and you know, everything that I had wanted to do differently. And yeah, just, it completely shifted my world. It was crazy. Yeah.
And now you're living here in Arizona.
Mm-hmm.
Are you still with your mother?
No, I still live in Mesa. I live down the street, and we live close to her, just so she can drop Ramsey at school. And Ramsey's dad recently moved here about a month ago, and so he takes him to school 3 days a week, too. And Ramsey spends, you know, one night a week with him and then one night on the weekends. And so that's been, ever since his dad got here, that's been a relief. To not be doing everything on my own, which I know I can do it, but it's physically and emotionally exhausting to, you know, work as much as I do and try to take care of him and everything else. And so it's nice to have his dad here finally to pick up a little bit of that.
When did you get divorced?
Last year in November. We separated in actually, a couple weeks after our anniversary, we separated. We filed in September, and it was finalized in November, beginning of November.
Yeah, that's it, you know, we've heard a lot of stories where birth really complicates the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and it seems to bring out, you know, not to be cliche, but someone's true colors, you know, and kind of forces your hand a little bit in terms of making decisions. Anytime your child's involved, it's like, it's a challenge.
Yeah, it was definitely rough. And, you know, after that, and after, we got back from Arizona and Ramsey was a couple months old and everything, it didn't really get any better. I mean, I essentially felt like a single mom from the very beginning. He worked all the time. I was home with Ramsey until he was 18 months. So I did everything. Which is, it's common, I guess, or I think, for stay-at-home moms to do a lot of that, but I just felt like he wasn't really super engaged ever. And it wasn't until we separated and got divorced that he really started to engage with Ramsey a little bit more. Before that, he didn't really. He would just kind of be in his own world, and he would be in one world in the house, and we would be in our little bubble in the house. And yeah, it's when it comes to child rearing and you know, when babies are young, it was hard. It was really hard.
Yeah, it can be hard to be so tethered to your baby's needs and then have someone else who seems like they still have their autonomy, and they're...
Mm-hmm.
That's challenging. It's hard to not be resentful sometimes.
Yeah, I felt trapped a lot of the time. Not that I don't... I mean, I love Ramsey, and I loved staying home with him and stuff, but because his father was so... unused to caring for him. I mean, it was hard for me to feel safe just going out by myself for an hour without somebody fucking something up. So that was challenging. As he's gotten older, it's gotten easier. I still have all those worries, but it's like, okay, well, he's 2.5. You know, he can talk now. He's very... very vocal about his wants and his needs, so at this point I'm just so tired, I need to let go, and I need to just let them figure it out, let him have his relationship with his dad, and let me have my life. But it was really hard. I think we would have broken up anyway, even without Ramsey, taking Ramsey out of the picture. I think we would have broken up anyway, probably sooner. But I think having Ramsey made it harder, but it also, I mean, it made me try harder, and it made me stick around longer, because, I thought, well, this is my child's father, and I come from a divorced family, and I didn't want to have to do that, and I didn't want to give up. I'm very stubborn. I didn't want to give up. So I didn't for a really long time, and I tried. And eventually I just said, no, it's not right. It's never been right, at least for me. It was never right. So it was tough.
Yeah, that's a really tough story. I mean, really tough. I really feel for you in that. If you were to have another baby, would you still do it at home and without medication and all of that?
If I ever have another baby, I'll still try for a home birth. I suppose it depends on the partner I have at the time. But I would like to. If I'm having another baby and I'm at home and I'm in labor... and I have really terrible back labor again, I don't know what I'm going to do, to be honest with you.
There won't be a blizzard.
So there won't be a blizzard, that's good.
It'll be faster.
Yeah. So I don't know. I don't know what I would do. Because I know, just from my experiences and my training, I know that if I had been in the hospital, they would have ruptured my water, they would have put me on PIT, and if he was stuck or in a bad position, he may not have come, and I may have ended up with a section. So I know that if it happens again, the same thing is likely to happen if I transfer to a hospital.
Yeah, and that recovery is worse than, you can't line up for that. I mean, it's like,
requires a little bit. So I think I would try to still do it at home.
You're so brave. Yeah, I mean, you're so brave. Yeah, that's intense. It's like every step of the way there is like
something
hardship,
else. You know something what I mean? Else. Like,
but I mean, through the pregnancy, so it wasn't like, oh, I had a really like breeze of a pregnancy, and then the labor was really challenging. It just seemed like you had a lot of challenges, and you really rose to every occasion. It was amazing. Yeah. It's really amazing. You must feel like really strong.
Some days I don't, but most days I'm like, okay, I can do this. Like, I can get through anything, even if it doesn't feel like it that day. Just get through the day, you know. There's a quote by this poet, Rainer Rilke. Have you heard of him? He's a German poet, and there's a quote of his, and it says, "Let everything happen to you, beauty and terror. Just keep going. No feeling is final." And I always, always think of that. Even back then, I thought of that. I thought, okay, we can get through it. We can do it. So, I guess it's... Now that I think about it, and now that I'm telling it, I guess it has been like kind of a crazy 2 years, 2.5 years. I'm tired. I hope it gets better from here.
I'm sure it will. Are you with someone now?
Mm-hmm, yeah. Nice. Yeah, we started dating in May. So we've been dating for like 3 months.
Yeah.
And that's been good. It's been a little challenging.
Sure.
Just with...
A two-year-old.
With... I don't have a lot of time. I mean, before his dad was here, you know, I didn't have... I had even less time. Now I have 2 nights a week to myself, and I usually spend them with my boyfriend. And he's also has a child. We recently had the kids meet, which was a big thing, you know.
Are they close in age?
His son is 5.
That's close,
and
though.
My son is 2.5, so they got along well when they met, and yeah, that went well, but it's just hard having a relationship amidst everything else, like the stresses of, I mean, I work roughly 43 hours a week.
What field are you in?
I work at a pest control company, so I work kind of a hybrid administrative customer service role. I answer the phones and I set the routes for everybody who does the pest control. And I do a lot of the paperwork and stuff like that. So I leave at 7 in the morning and I don't pick up Ramsey from my mom until 5:45, 6. And so I have a lot of guilt about...
Is it 5 days a week?
Mm-hmm. And every 6 weeks I get a half day during the week and then I work a half Saturday, which is what I did yesterday. So it wasn't too bad, but
thanks for taking the time to talk with us.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Is your mom watching him now or is he
with He's with his dad.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, this is great. I think you gave us a lot to work with. I mean, a lot. The quote was good too. Mm-hmm.
Sorry I said so much.
I don't think you said didn't. At all.
Oh, okay. At the beginning, a little bit, but not.
Yeah, I didn't pick up on that at all. Yeah.
Oh, okay, good.
Oh, I was taking lots of other notes.
Yeah. I'm going to go ahead and stop. Mm-hmm. Okay.